Today, I wish you all good morning and welcome, especially our new people. And I'm Lyndall, and I'll be giving our talk today, getting us started on this month's new topic of ritual and devotional practices. So I'm going to spend a little time giving an introduction to this subject, and then I'm going to go on and talk about ritual and community. One of the ways of thinking about ritual that maybe the most accessible for all of us, so maybe is a good place to start. So when I first heard that this was going to be our topic for this month, ritual and devotional practices, I thought, well, wonder what that's going to be all about, rituals and devotional practices, because I didn't feel like there was all that much in the way of rituals and devotion in my practice, and I wasn't even really sure I wanted to have a lot of ritual and devotion. And maybe some of you have that kind of feeling too, like a little confusion or resistance. And I don't think this is very surprising, because in the Theravada Buddhist tradition that we're a part of, and especially in our Western Insight tradition, ritual and devotional practices really aren't such a big deal, at least not in the way we usually think about them. We tend to think about rituals as being elaborate ceremonies and devotional practices as being worship and prayer to gods and goddesses, and we really don't have much of those things at all, if at all. And in fact, the teachings tell us, don't put your faith in rites and rituals. What's important is really seeing the truth for yourself. But when we had our meeting last month, when all of us that teach got together with Tweri to plan our talks and schedules for this month, Tweri explained to us what she meant by ritual and devotional practices. And this really helped me to see this topic in a much broader way than the way I was thinking about it originally. So as an introduction, I'd like to share some of her thoughts with you in hopes that they'll be as helpful for you as they were for me. So from what Tweri told us, in her view, rituals and devotional practices are practices that first help to bring us in alignment with the essential teachings of Buddhism and to support our commitment and our connection with the Dharma. And they also help us to recognize and remember that this practice is really a spiritual practice. You know, it's more than self-help or stress reduction or psychological understandings, as helpful as those things are. Our practice goes beyond that and really connects with the sacred and with the unconditioned. And so these rituals and devotional practices can remind us of that. So we come to our practice with that sort of attitude and connection. And as I thought about it, I began to realize that this topic of ritual and devotion is really the perfect thing for us to be considering after spending a month on relationship, because these kinds of practices really are all about relationship. They help us to develop a relationship with the three refuges, with the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, so that we really feel like we are going for refuge and these are something alive in our practice. They can help us develop a relationship with the Brahma Viharas, or what you might call the spirit of unconditional love. And the Brahma Viharas themselves are a kind of devotional practice. And they help us develop a relationship with the Eightfold Path. So we have a sense of really connecting with the teachings and they're alive for us. And so it isn't the rituals in themselves that are important and powerful. It's more the kinds of understandings they represent, the views they help us to remember, the attitudes of mind that they help us to reinforce. And because of that, in part, they're very personal. And, you know, there's no one right way to do this. So we need to find our own ways of working with ritual and devotion and connecting to the sacred element in our practice. And it may be really different for everybody. For some people, more types of ceremony is very helpful. For others, not so much. You know, for example, just the act of meditation itself can be devotional. And as Jerry was saying, you know, something as simple and basic as our daily sitting or showing up and sitting together with our Sangha every week. That's a kind of ritual and devotion. Or it might involve something that's closer to what we normally would think of ritual. You know, chanting the refuges and the precepts or chanting the Brahma Viharas, chanting sutras, maybe maintaining an altar in your home with flowers and candles and a statue of the Buddha. There are lots of things we might do. And we can also consider, too, that there are various kinds of rituals that I've sort of touched on already. Rituals that develop community, rituals that develop the heart and our connection with a sense of love, and rituals that connect us to the mystery or the sacred. And we'll be talking about all of those over the coming month. And also we'll be having a session next week with four perspectives on ritual and devotion with four of the LDLs who come from, you know, different religious backgrounds of origin. So it may kind of get you a sense of what your own relationship is with ritual and devotional practices and just the variety that there can be. But today I'm going to start with rituals that build community. And I think, Liz, as I said before, this is a good place to start because a lot of times rituals are things we do as a group together. And when we think about rituals, we think about things that we do as a community. So it feels natural to think about them as practices that build community, even if we aren't quite sure what they might be in our own individual practice. So I'd like to start my talk today with a poem by Joe Harjo, who's our U.S. Poet Laureate. And this poem is written from a Native American perspective, so some of the language might not be what we would necessarily use in our tradition, but it was so beautiful, and I felt like a lot of what she says really applies to anybody who is seeking community through a spiritual path. So here is the poem. It's called "For Calling the Spirit Back from Wandering the Earth in Its Human Feet." Put down that bag of potato chips, that white bread, that bottle of pop. Turn off that cell phone, computer, and remote control. Open the door, then close it behind you. Take a breath offered by friendly winds. They travel the earth, gathering essences of plants to clean. Give it back with gratitude. If you sing, it will give your spirit lift to fly to the stars, ears, and back. Acknowledge this earth who has cared for you since you were a dream, planting itself precisely within your parents' desire. Let your moccasin feet take you to the encampment of the guardians who have known you before time, who will be there after time. They sit before the fire that has been there without time. Let the earth stabilize your post-colonial insecure jitters. Be respectful of the small insects, birds, and animal people who accompany you. Ask their forgiveness for the harm we humans have brought down upon them. Don't worry. The heart knows the way. Though there may be high rises, interstates, checkpoints, armed soldiers, massacres, wars, and those who will despise you because they despise themselves. The journey might take you a few hours, a day, a year, a few years, 100, 1,000, even more. Watch your mind. Without training, it might run away and leave your heart for the immense human feast set by the thieves of time. Do not hold regrets. When you find your way to the circle, to the fire kept burning by the keepers of your soul, you will be welcomed. You must clean yourself with cedar, sage, or other healing plants. Cut the ties you have to failure and shame. Let go the pain you are holding in your mind, your shoulders, your heart, all the way to your feet. Let go the pain of your ancestors to make way for those who are heading in our direction. Ask for forgiveness. Call upon the help of those who love you. These helpers may take many forms: animal, element, bird, angel, saint, stone, or ancestor. Call your spirit back. It may be caught in corners and creases of shame, judgment, and human abuse. You must call in a way that your spirit will want to return. Speak to it as you would to a beloved child. Welcome your spirit back from its wandering. It may return in pieces, in tatters. Gather them together. They will be happy to be found after being lost for so long. Your spirit will need to sleep a while after it is bathed and given clean clothes. Now you can have a party. Invite everyone you know who loves and supports you. Keep room for those who have no place to go. Make a giveaway, and remember, keep the speeches short. Then you must do this: help the next person find their way through the dark. And I think this is so beautiful. You know, it just touches me, to brings tears to my eyes. And I think her words really capture what our rituals are for and help us to find our way. You know, they help us to find our way back to the circle, to call upon the help of those who love us, whether animal, element, bird, angel, saint, stone, ancestor, whatever, to ask for forgiveness, to make a giveaway, generosity, to keep room for those who have no place to go, and to help the next person find their way through the dark. And when we think of rituals and practices in this way, I think we begin to see how important and how powerful they can be. In our tradition, it may seem like our practices are so simple and our rituals are so simple that you wouldn't even call them rituals. But when you think about it, and maybe reading some of these things, you know, things like kindness for ourselves, asking forgiveness, gathering in the circle, you might recognize that we do have rituals and devotional practices that help us to come to that circle and find refuge in community or sangha. And just as Jerry mentioned at the beginning of the day, sitting together regularly is one of those rituals. You know, meeting, coming together, sitting together, like we're doing this Sunday, we know we're a community. And also some of our Sunday rituals are important. These simple rituals that remind us that we're here together, our community statement that we read each Sunday, and the practice we often do at the beginning of our sit of taking three community breaths. In the community statement, we begin by saying, as we enter this space, let us remember we are entering a sacred space, a space for being in the moment with whatever is present. So this reminds us that we're invoking this sense of the sacred. we say we recognize our deep connection with one another, for each of us is welcome just as we are. So here we acknowledge we're a community. We have that sense of welcoming all, of kindness and metta for all. And then we say, freeing our minds of greed, hatred, and delusion through this practice offers the opportunity for others to do the same and reduces ignorance and hatred in the world. So with these words, we remember that we don't practice only for ourselves, and that our practice also contributes to the freedom of all beings, even if we don't always understand or see the different ways in which it might do this. And finally, we say it is with gratitude that we practice together, once again realizing this importance of community. And then the three community breaths that are also a reminder that, yes, we are here together. And when we're here physically, we can even, you know, hear those breaths. So, you know, we don't always think about what we're saying, but if we remember to really think about it, it's a very powerful. Ringing the bells at the beginning and ending of our sits is another ritual. You might think of the sound of the bell as a reminder to pay attention, to wake up. And also the ritual of ringing the bell three times reminds us of the three refuges, the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. Those of you who have practiced with our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, may also be familiar with another ritual around the bell that he often did, the practice of really stopping and listening to the sound of the bell. You know, not just using it as a signal of, oh, okay, the sit is over, it's time for the next thing, but to really stop and listen and pay attention and wait, hear the sound, and only begin to move and to bow when the bell is over. And speaking of bowing, there's also the practice of bowing, which we may do at the end of a sit, at the end of a talk, when someone finishes speaking, when we're meeting in person as we enter the Dharma hall. And this ritual can symbolize various things. As we enter the hall or sit down on our cushion, we might bow to acknowledge that we are entering a sacred space. It's a way of, you know, reminding us of that. Or to the statue of the Buddha, out of a sense of respect and gratitude for everything he did to discover this path. We bow at the end of a sit to acknowledge we spent some sacred time together. At the end of a talk, we may bow to show respect and gratitude toward the teacher. And the teacher bows to those of us listening to show respect and gratitude for our willingness to come together and listen to the Dhamma. And we bow to each other as a way of saying, you know, I acknowledge you as someone who's here just the same as I am, with the same intention to practice, with the same commitment to a life of wisdom and kindness as much as I'm able to live it. So it's a way of acknowledging that we're in this together, you know, really acknowledging each other's commitment to the Dhamma. Taking the refuges and precepts together can be another very powerful ceremony that builds community and brings a sense of shared commitment to living a life of non-harming. And here at Sims, at the beginning of the year, we have a ceremony where we recite the refuges and precepts together, and then we help each other tie a protection cord around our wrists or maybe our neck. And this is a very popular ceremony, and a lot of times people who don't, you know, come to Sims very much any other time come for that ceremony. You know, it's a sort of a public way of committing ourselves and acknowledging our commitment to take the precepts seriously. And I've also really always loved the practice on retreat. of reciting the refuges and precepts, where we often will come together early in the morning, you know, for the very first sitting of the day, when often, you know, the sun hasn't even risen yet, and chanting the refuges and precepts together. And I like, too, the fact that often in that setting, we often chant them in Pali. Because using those Pali words reminds me that we aren't just part of the community we're in right at that time, important as that is, but that we're connected to a much larger community. You know, all of the practitioners all over the world that chant these same words in just the same way, regardless of what country they're from, what their native language is from, they chant in this way. And not only that, all of the practitioners through time, all of our lineage, all the way to the Buddha himself, chanted these words in this way. And so that's just a very moving and powerful connection for me. And then, of course, even more than the chanting, adhering to the precepts themselves as best as we're able to do is huge in terms of creating community. Because when we do that, we're really creating a safe space where we don't have to worry about somebody physically harming us, you know, screaming or yelling at us or saying unkind things to us or lying to us or stealing from us or harassing us or assaulting us sexually. We know we're safe. And this is just a huge benefit, huge benefit. So that's very important too. Also, another practice that we often do, sharing the merit and offering metta at the end of a meeting, the end of a sitting, the end of a day. And Jerry did some of this with our sit, offering metta. This is another ritual that builds a sense of community. When we share the merit, this helps us to realize that we don't practice only for ourselves, and this force for goodness arises when we practice together. We can share it with those we love, whether living or whether they've passed on. And this force affects other beings in ways we may not realize. And offering metta for those of us who are gathered together in this room or group, for those dear to us and to all beings, it's really another way of acknowledging that we're all related, that we're all part of a community. And whether we're doing it in a group or doing it individually, really practicing metta and the other Brahmaviharas in any form is an important devotional practice that builds community. You know, when we take the time to do those practices and remember that we have a relationship with ourselves, with our teachers and mentors, with our friends, relatives, and family, and even with those who we don't know very well or those who we have difficulty with, it really builds this sense of community, a sense of community with all beings and a sense that we can be part of a kindness that goes beyond just the relationships that bring us some satisfaction and happiness. And then there's also the practice of dana. And this also we can consider a devotional practice. You know, a really powerful way of building community, of honoring and expressing gratitude towards our teachers, and also of gratitude for the teachings and a sense of really wanting to support this tradition and contribute to their continuing. So this is a really very important ritual and practice. So these are some examples of the most basic rituals and devotional practices that we do here at SIMS, and I think you're likely to find in one form or another at pretty much all of the insight meditation groups, things we always do and we may not really think of as rituals or necessarily to think of as devotion. Now, under Tim's and Tuari's guidance, we're also beginning to incorporate some additional ceremonies into our schedule that are maybe a little bit more like actual ceremonies. Things such as the forgiveness ceremony, where we take some time to actually, you know, forgive and ask for forgiveness of those where we maybe have had difficulty with. Or the remembrance ceremony we did this year that Suze was a big part of, where we pay respects to loved ones that we've lost. Or the special sit and ceremony that we did this year for Vesak, the day that commemorates the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and death. And I remember doing that. It was just really lovely that day to get my little bowl of water with my flower petals and my Buddha statue and my little incense and candle and have it out on the table and just be knowing it was there throughout the day and looking at it throughout the day and maybe a little bow throughout the day. It was something, you know, not a huge complicated ritual, but a ritual that was special. And you might feel that some of these ceremonies have been like that for you. So when we take time to consider it, we may see that we have a lot closer relationship with ritual and devotional practices than we realize, and that we've all been participating in them in one way or another to help create a sense of community and to remind us that we're not so separate, and to help us learn to really take refuge in Sangha. So to end, let's just sit together for a few moments, having the sense of being together. And remembering the words of Joy Harjo. When you find your way to the circle, to the fire kept burning by the keepers of your soul, you will be welcomed. Invite everyone you know who loves and supports you. Keep room for those who have no place to go. Make a giveaway. And remember, keep the speeches short. Then you must do this. Help the next person find their way through the dark. So thank you all so much for your attention, being here, listening. And now we have some time for discussion and for you to have, you know, express your own thoughts about this topic. So this is also a time for those of you who maybe don't have the time this morning or not, you know, in quite the right mental space for discussion, to say goodbye and leave us. If you would like to do that, that's perfectly fine. So I'll give a moment for people to do that. And then I will put you into your discussion groups. Okay, with three or four people in the rooms typically. And our discussion question for today is to just talk a little bit about what your own relationship is with ritual and devotional practices. Do you love them? Do you hate them? Are you not sure that you even have a relationship with them? You know, what is your relationship? And then maybe talk about what rituals have you found to be especially helpful for you in terms of creating a sense of community and helping you to take refuge in Sangha. So I will go ahead and create the groups. And I'll give you a little note when we get towards the end. We'll have like maybe 15 minutes or so for discussion.
A gift. Thank you all.
Oh, thank you. Everybody's back. So welcome everyone back from your discussions. And now we have a little bit of time for any kind of comments you might have about what you discussed, questions, anything like that. And Jerry, if it gets to the time when we need to stop to make sure that Suze has enough for her announcements and your announcements and our closing, and I don't stop people, go ahead and take the initiative. So anyone that has any questions or comments, you can let me know by with the little hand in the reactions, you know, raising your little hand, and then I know that you will want to speak and you can unmute yourself.
Do you see Sean and Bruce?
Oh, hi. I didn't, but
I turn off my hand before I forget.
Yes, I see your hand now. Now I see your hand.
I really appreciated your talk because it reminded me of all the little things that we do in this practice that are ritual, because I don't think of our practice as being, of having a lot of ritual. And it really does when you really look at all the little components. I guess maybe I just sort of take it for granted. I'm not really sure. But one of the things that I wanted to share that Bruce and I started as a ritual, because we're a little sangha, Bruce and I. And after we sit, we both share three things that we're grateful for. And we've been doing that for years. And I realized, well, that's a ritual that we do. Yeah, and we just kind of figured that out ourselves. And then when we lived in Port Townsend, we had a sit at our house every week, and we used to close by singing the Metta chant in Pali. And sometimes we did it in English too, which was really nice for the group to do it in English. So I'm thinking should get that out and start doing that again, because it's a really nice thing to do.
Those are beautiful. Those are two beautiful rituals. You know, the gratitude. I mean, I know a lot of people do that, not necessarily in a sangha, but even individually as a ritual. And chanting the Metta Sutta in Pali, yes. There's so many beautiful Pali Metta chants. And, you know, sometimes I kind of wish we did that at Sims more. It's really nice. So thank you for sharing a couple more ideas of beautiful rituals. And let's see, Kathy, you have your hand up.
Yeah. And I managed to even unmute myself, so I can talk. How lovely. our small group was really nice. We really shared about different things that we had done. And, you know, oftentimes we don't, I think, recognize them as being rituals. But I think anything for me that puts me in contact with how important the Dharma is to me is a ritual. And I talked about how I've brought back all of these objects from Buddhist countries that are all over my home, and that for me, seeing them really refreshes that sense of commitment. So for me, that's one of the things that makes a difference.
Thank you so much. I think that might be true for a lot of people. You know, I know that I have Buddha statues around in my home, and when I see them, it's a little Mm-hmm. And, or the practice of having a special place dedicated, if you have the room for it, for a little altar and where your cushion and stuff is. I know that is something a lot of people like to do. So those are good rituals as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else have anything they would? Oh, Susan is raising her actual hand. Yes.
Sorry, I cannot find that button to put my hand on the screen. Sorry. connection and community. In our group, we talked about even the breakout rooms. I don't remember that we talked about breakout, you know, the discussion part that we actually, you know, in this sense on Zoom, we kind of get tossed into a room. And that at first, that process, even the one-on-one, you know, would just send shivers up my spine in person that, oh, I'm going to have to turn and talk. Which direction do I turn my futon or whatever? We're talking about Zafu. And all of that, it was the vulnerability that I needed to kind of surrender to in order to be in a breakout room. And that connection in that room was so, it always broadened my experience and sent me kind of to a new location in the Dharma by just being willing to be vulnerable in that breakout room. We talked about that and that was important to us.
Yeah, I think it's important to many of us, very important. And I thought about mentioning that, but as I was going along, there's so many things. And as the poem says, keep the speeches short, you know. But yes, I think this practice of having discussion is really important. As you say, Susan, just for the vulnerability, you know, coming together with that vulnerability and just getting to know each other,
mm-hmm.
sharing, it's a very important part. And I think something else I've thought of too, I think with many groups, one of the things like the Kalyana Mita groups or other small groups often start with a kind of a group check-in or sharing. So people have a chance to talk a little bit about what's going on in their lives, in their practice. And this is another community building type of ceremony too. So yeah, that's important, you know, sharing together. Let's see. Oh, okay. Dean and John.
Is there enough time, Jerry, or you're wanting to end it?
Let's make this the last.
The last.
Okay. One. All right. I'll be quick. I just wanted to say I appreciate, Lyndall, you're lifting up kind of these, like what I would call ritual light, lots of small ways in a tradition that I came to thinking they don't really do ritual, but there is quite a bit. But I also wanted to say that I really appreciate the, sort of more formal ritual ceremonies that we've been able to participate in with Tim and Tuari, over the last year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also brings the sense of community and it honors the sacred qualities of the practice. That's all.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, nice. Thank you, Jean.
Mm-hmm.